It's The Record. I'm Ross Reynolds in for Bill Radke on this first day of summer. It's got us thinking about summer songs. Do you have a favorite summer song? Let us know what it is and why it's your favorite summer song. Tweet at us at KUOW and Bree Ripley will check it out. The open skies have always represented limitless possibility, and perhaps for no one more so than Myra Slovak. His biography reads like a big-budget adventure film. Daredevil pilot, communist defector, hydroplane racer, and character extraordinaire with a life full of stories. He was the personal pilot of Bill Boeing. He dated starlets. But his one true love was flying, and he always found freedom in the sky. David Williams has written a new book about Slovak called Race to Freedom, and he joins me to talk about Slovak's life. Welcome, Dave. Thanks for being with us.
Well, it's great to be here, Ross, on this first day of summer.
It's just an amazing story, as you tell it. He was Myra Slovak, born in Czechoslovakia in 1929, and he was a kid when the Nazis occupied his country. What was that like for him?
Well, first of all, Myra was just an amazing person and a great friend, and I'm honored to have been able to write his biography. He said that life under the Nazis, he kind of felt guilty because it wasn't so bad for him and his family. He lived in Slovakia, the eastern half of Czechoslovakia, which was primarily an agricultural-based economy, and his father ran a grain silo. And the Nazis needed food for their soldiers, so they cooperated very well with the Slovak population. It wasn't until one day in summer when a railroad train got diverted onto the siding that served his father's silo, and it was a cattle car, but it didn't look like the cattle cars. It didn't smell. That was one of the things he said. It didn't smell like a cattle car. It smelled really foul. And his mother quick sprung into action. His mother ran a little saloon on their property, and she grabbed all of the cigarettes that she could find and put them in a box, and then she grabbed a bunch of bread and put it in a pillowcase and had Myra fill up a bucket of water. And Myra was sort of confused. And she said, go up to the train and bribe the guards with cigarettes. Give them cigarettes and get them laughing. Make them feel like they're your friends. And then ask them, can you feed their cattle? And if they say yes, then go give the bread to the people. And he said, people? What do you mean people? And she said, well, those are people, and they're headed to a really bad place. Myra's hometown was just a few miles south of the Polish border. And right on the other side of the Polish border, at the end of those railroad tracks, was Auschwitz. And we all know that Auschwitz was a death camp where a lot of Jews and undesirables, as the Nazis called them, were executed. So Myra went up to the train. He talked with the guards. He gave him cigarettes, and he finally said, well, can I feed your cattle? And one of the German officers sneered and said, those aren't cattle. Those are pigs. So Myra headed over, and he began to feed, you know, hand in bread and hand in ladles full of water to the people in the train car. And at one point, the doors were chained shut, but not tight. A little girl about 6 years old was able to stick her head out of the door. And he realized, oh my gosh, these are not soldiers. These are not old men. These are my neighbors. These are the kids that I don't see in my class anymore. These are my neighbors that I can't find anymore. This is what's going on. So he realized then there was something diabolical going on. There wasn't a lot that his family could do, but they did shortly after that. They ended up taking in two Jewish families to live in their basement for the duration of the war. And there was a little bit of discontent, if you will, that his neighbors would see that Myra's mother was serving German officers in the saloon and thought, oh, well, they're collaborators. But in fact, while they were serving officers in the saloon up above in the basement, they had two entire Jewish families hidden. Wow. And those families did survive the war, and one lives in Australia now and the other lives in Paraguay.
We're talking about a man who became Bill Boeing's pilot and a championship hydroplane racer with Dave Williams. He's executive director of the Hydroplane and Raceboat Museum, and he's written about the man in The Race to Freedom, the Myra Slovak story. The Nazis were defeated, of course, and Myra's hometown liberated by the Russians. Myra becomes a Czech Air Force pilot and rises quickly. So he must have been a very talented pilot.
He was extremely talented, but there was also a bit of political intrigue with his rise in the Air Force so quickly. During World War II, when the Nazis took over, 700 pilots from Czechoslovakia defected and went to England and formed the Free Czech Air Force, Wars flying out of England. At the end of the war, they came home and they were welcomed like heroes, and they rose quickly and took in positions of power in the Air Force. In 1948, there was a communist coup, and the communists took over Czechoslovakia. And one of the first things the communist government did was purge the military of anybody who had any contact with the West. So that meant all 700 officers at the top got booted out, and they had to bring up the young officers as quickly as possible. So yeah, 21 years old, Myra was a captain in the Czechoslovakian Air Force.
And then he goes from the Air Force to becoming a commercial pilot. They also fired all the commercial pilots?
Yeah, after the purge of the Air Force, the communists decided to purge the airline, and another large batch of pilots were arrested, imprisoned, and let go. So the Air Force loaned their top pilots to the airline. So again, at 21, Myra found himself the captain on a commercial airliner flying. He was allowed at that point to fly all over Europe, not just within the communist bloc. He was trusted enough that he was allowed to fly into Sweden, into many of the Western airports.
So he experienced Nazism, seeing people in cattle cars. He has experienced communism and seeing these purges. So he decides that neither of these are for him. He plans a daring escape. Tell us about his escape from Czechoslovakia.
Sure. And there are a number of reasons that he felt like he needed to escape, not the least of which is that the Czech had a very powerful secret police. And if someone, a neighbor, a friend, informed on you and told the secret police that you weren't doing everything the way the government wanted, these dour men in green coats would show up in the middle of the night and arrest you, and you would never be heard from again. And there were a number of Myra's friends who were arrested that way. So Myra decides that he needs to defect, and he's working with the anti-communist underground. And at one point they say, you know, we need to come up with a code word that we can use for this operation. And he says, well, how about picnic? We'll call this picnic.
Going on a picnic.
Exactly. We can talk in public. We can say, hey, Ross, what are you going to bring on the picnic? What are you going to wear? What's the weather like? Would Tuesday be a good day for the picnic? So it became Operation Picnic. And they hadn't quite set a date that they were going to leave. The idea was Myra would smuggle 3 guns on board the plane. The Czech underground would book a number of passengers on that flight that were sympathetic to Myra, and they would take over the plane and divert it.
And it's important to understand here, his co-pilots were not into this defection at all. He ended up locking them out of the cockpit.
Exactly. Yes, he ends up pulling off the escape, bringing 2 passengers up, handing them guns, and they take over the plane. And they had to lock the co-pilot and the radio operator and the engineer in the closet. And just as an aside, once they land in Germany, finally, the engineer, as Myra is being escorted off the plane by the American MPs, the engineer sort of whispers to him, you bastard, you didn't tell me. I could have brought my wife. So he ended up having the engineer had to go back because he left his wife and family behind. And he felt if Myra had warned him, he would have been able to bring his family on the plane.
And after this escape, Myra Slovak also had a ton of Soviet documents with him. So when he arrives in the West, he's welcomed with open arms. He eventually, through a series of travels, gets to the United States, and he's a trained pilot. He wants to fly an airliner here, but there's a catch.
Right. In 1948, when the communists took over, if you wanted to be an officer in the military, which you needed to be an officer to fly, you had to join the Communist Party, and you had to sign an oath of loyalty to the communists. So Myra really wasn't very politically savvy. He didn't care. He just wanted to fly. So he signed the loyalty oath, and he joined the Communist Party. Once he got to America, that became a problem because you have to remember this was the early 1950s.
It McCarthy
was McCarthyism. And there was nothing, there was nothing worse to an American at that point than a commie or a red. And Myra, even though he had defected, legally he was still a communist. And you could not become a citizen for 10 years after you had renounced your membership of the Communist Party, and you could not fly an airplane, you couldn't fly an airliner. Most importantly, you couldn't get your FCC first-class radio license, which you needed to be a pilot. So the CIA goes to work, and they do a couple of things. First of all, they figure out that something you can do without a radio license is be a crop duster. So they sent Myra over to Yakima, and he was a crop duster.
And the CIA kind of owes Myra something because of all those documents he brought from the Soviet Union.
He is sort of their golden boy. He has brought over this huge batch of documents.
So they want to do him a solid, and they eventually get him a job as Bill Boeing's personal pilot. Here's where it connects to the Northwest.
Yes, they do. They get him a job as Boeing's pilot, and then they begin to work with Senator Magnuson, who was our great senator here for a number of years, to get a special law passed that allows Myra to get a radio operator's license while still having the membership of the Communist Party on his record. So Myra comes to Seattle. He meets the Boeings. And one of the things that just I was never really clear if it was just serendipitous or if it was actually planned by the CIA. But Bill Boeing, this is Bill Boeing Jr.
Right.
His wife, Marcy, was her last name was Czech. And as you might imagine, her family was Czechoslovakian. Huh. Her mother and father spoke Czech. Her mother, Blanche, cooked these fabulous Czech meals, and Myra was instantly adopted into that family as another family member. So he goes from being raised on a little farm in Czechoslovakia to being in the communist military to essentially being adopted by one of the wealthiest, most powerful families in the U.S., and he becomes sort of a surrogate Boeing.
But wait, there's more.
Yeah, and that's just the start. This is a setup for the story.
So he's in Seattle. He's flying planes for Bill Boeing, a job the CIA got him. I'm speaking with Dave Williams, executive director of the Hydroplane and Raceboat Museum, which is kind of where the connection starts to come. So he starts piloting hydroplanes, basically jets on the water. And for folks who are new to the Seattle area, maybe you could just give them a quick summary of the culture of the hydroplane here, which is
sure. Well, there are, in Seattle, first of all, you have to imagine this is long before Pete Carroll and the Seahawks, long before the Mariners, long before the Seahawks, Sonics, Sounders, any of that. The only thing going on in Seattle at that time is Husky football. And the Seattle Rainiers playing minor league baseball out at Sixth Stadium. And then Husky rowing was a big thing, too. So hydroplane racing is an old sport that actually had started back on the East Coast in the 1900s. In 1905 was the first race. And the cool thing about hydroplane racing is the winning boat got to choose where the next race would be held. So if you won the race back in on the East Coast and you lived in Seattle, you could bring the race to Seattle.
And Myra won twice, two championships.
He did. He did. In 1950, a guy from Seattle named Stan Sayers, who had a boat that was designed by a fellow from Boeing that wasn't so much a boat but was more of a plane that flew across the water, skimmed the surface, won the Gold Cup and brought the Gold Cup to Seattle in 1951. That was the first race in Seattle. There was nothing really else going on in the summertime, and it hit the city like a tidal wave. One statistic that people never believe, but it is true. In 1955, when the population of Seattle was 600,000, the Seattle Police Department estimates that 500,000 people showed up at the race course to watch the race.
It's been superseded by some other things now, but it's still a giant thing in the summertime. It is basically seafare, these hydroplane races. So the Myra Slovak story, so we're going to condense it here because there's so much to tell. So he's racing hydroplanes and winning. He's flying stunt planes in the same show. He becomes an inspirational speaker. And we're sort of at the end of the interview, but I find it so interesting that he's an illegal defector. He turns into a strong American patriot. But we might think here in the Seattle context, this is a liberal person with liberal attitudes. Not necessarily true when we talk about Myra. You knew him.
Sure. Myra was a complex character, and he did so many different things. It's hard to pin down exactly how he would have felt. But I do know that he was a staunch patriot. And you find that often in the immigrant community, where people who make the active decision, I am going to become an American, I'm going to give up my home, my job, my family, and come to America and invest myself in the American system, they become very, very patriotic. And Myra was amazingly patriotic. And he did during the Vietnam era, during the anti-war era. He was virulently anti-communist. That was the worst thing in the world to him. So he didn't understand the anti-war movement.
So we imagine what the staunch anti-communist might have thought about our President Donald Trump praising the president of Russia. But on other issues, how might he have felt?
I've struggled with that. You know, Myra passed away 4 years ago, so he's not here to ask.
Yeah.
I know that he was a supporter of Nixon and a supporter of Reagan, because those were kind of law and order, patriotic Americans.
Yeah.
Trump's involvement with the Russians would have mortified Myra, but Trump's very strong conservative Make America Great would have attracted him. And it's hard for me to, I don't want to be too much of a politician here and straddle the line, but it is hard for me to decide which way he would have fallen on this issue. I can argue either direction on that.
An amazing American character, his story, the story of Myra Slovak told in the book Race to Freedom. And David Williams, thank you so much for stopping by to tell us about it.
Oh, it's been my pleasure, Ross.
Dave's executive director of the Hydroplane and Raceboat Museum in Kent. And we've just barely summarized this story. There's so much more. The starlets, the fame, et cetera, et cetera. A great read, Race to Freedom.